Welcome to the Resistance Chronicle. I'm Matt.
I'm Eric.
Here's our awesome intro. Before the awesome intro, we had a great guest today on. His name is Etienne de la Boetie Square. He is an activist and organizer, starter of the Art of Liberty Foundation, supporter of the Thick Red Line Project, and he is making a case on the show today of why New Hampshire is the place that we need to launch liberty and tell the government to take their scam and go screw themselves. So speaking of government scam,
he also has a book out.
Yeah.
Probably one of the most interesting books I've read. It's pretty visual learning, very easy to read, and with it you can also get the Liberator flash drive, which has the book on there, because the book has like what would look like hyperlinks. But you can't obviously click a book, but if you pull up the book on here, it's just a USB, you can pull up the book, click the links. There's also a bunch of other stuff in there as well. Stencils, yeah, it's like all, everything you can think of.
All backed up.
And this is a very good book. Just show your friends and get the word out there.
So what I see, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts, right? You got folks like Adam with Denver Gets Red Pilled, the Grimerica guys, and a couple others that I listen to that are all looking for a new place to move. They want to get out of their states. Adam is in Oregon, right outside of Portland. The Grimerica guys are up in Canada. In this podcast, Etienne makes a legitimate case of why you should all move to New Hampshire. I want to get involved in this and learn more about it, and I think it's going to be a good thing.
Yeah.
He dropped a lot of knowledge on this podcast. This was awesome.
Yeah, I know there's probably more, but to me this sounds like a foolproof plan.
Yeah.
Sounds way more legit than QAnon.
He sells it very well. He sells it very, very well. He knows what he's talking about.
But he sells it, but he doesn't sell it in a way that's like sleazy. Like he's not like a used car salesman. He knows the stuff. If you read his book, this is not something he put together in 5 minutes like we did this intro. This is like years and years of research, a lot of things. He has all sources linked to everything is written in here. I mean, it's not, and he even says in the podcast that nobody's ever actually like said you're factually wrong in anything.
Yeah, nobody can debunk it.
So yeah, and you know they're dying to do that. So enjoy.
So speaking though of winging it in this awesome intro that we're doing to our awesome intro, what I want to start doing is some housekeeping. And first I want to thank the fans, anybody who's watching. We have
the one person that bought a shirt.
Yeah.
Please reach out to us.
Email us. So we have an email, resistancechronicle@gmail.com. We're probably going to change that over to Proton Mail, but we're at gmail.com for now. You know, we have a website, theresistancechronicle.com. And we're trying to make this podcast into something, especially now that we've gotten to talk with Etienne and learn about what his plan is for New Hampshire, and we want to help out with that.
And all the other people we've talked to along the way have really pushed us.
I hate pandering, but we have a donation, so if you find value, you know, Adam and Ricky Verandas do this value for value model. I'm going to totally bite that right now and say we want to do a value for value model. So if you find value in the content that we're putting out and, you know, the website that we have and all that, if you can donate, we have links on the website to different cryptocurrencies that we support and we love. Obviously we would take, you know, fiat as well. And anything that would be donated would not go into Eric and I's pockets to, you know, go buy beers and drink beers and buy pizza. It would go right back into the show. We would upgrade our mics, and you know, get another guest
like
on.
A mixer to get better sound quality out there.
Maybe even turn this into doing it from the waterboarding room here, the dining room, to actually, you know, putting some sort of, you know, studio together and you know, really, really, really getting into it. We're having a lot of fun doing it. We picked up some listeners in Russia. The Soviet Union is there on the list. You know, it's getting out there. So thank you to everybody who is listening and is supporting and is emailing. There was only one, and we're looking for more. email if you have any questions or if you want to see any particular guests on the show and see us interview them. And with that,
enjoy our awesome intro.
It's not a political statement. It's a patriotic duty.
The editors of great newspapers, such as yours, owe a common obligation to the people.
But freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream.
What are you people? On dope?
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
But we have some bad hombres here, and we're going to get them out.
So we're recording. We're with Etienne de la Boetie Squared, and it's the Resistance Chronicle. I'm Matt.
I'm Eric.
And welcome. Yeah, we're super casual with this whole conversation. We want like a natural conversation. I don't really want like, you know, a stuffy conversation on all this, but I have a few talking points that I want to get through. But I really wanted you to shine on this. I heard you the first time on Adam's podcast, Deborah Gets Red Pilled, and that's who put me in touch with you. I asked him for your contact information. And the reason why I did that was because I heard you on Propaganda Report with Monica Perez. And that was the first time I heard you talking about New Hampshire. And we live in New Hampshire. We're in Southern New Hampshire in Salem. And we started this podcast in November. And it started out kind of just me and him talking and hanging out. And it was just a good time. Then we started bringing on guests. And then we said, now we're talking about all this stuff. What can we do about it? And I'm hoping through the Art of Liberty Foundation and your other organizations, the Thick Red Line, that we can somehow maybe get involved, especially with the New Hampshire ties and make New Hampshire the place where liberty starts. So with that, Etienne, I want you to take it away. Let's talk about the book. You wrote this awesome book, Government, the Biggest Scam in History. I have it lambasted with sticky notes that I'm going back to. I plugged the Liberator in and started going through the book on the Liberator and clicking on all the links, and it's amazing, man. So with that, please take it away. Nice background, by the way.
Sure. So my name is Etienne de la Boetie Squared, and that's a pen name. I'm a voluntarist author, and the book is Government, the Biggest Scam in History Exposed. And the subtitle of the book is How Intergenerational Organized Crime Runs the Government and the Media. And I come at it from the standpoint of a voluntarist. And a voluntarist is somebody that doesn't believe in the legitimacy, the necessity, or the desirability of having a government at all. And in fact, government is, it's impossible to have a legitimate moral government, no matter what flavor of government that it is, because it's impossible for people to delegate rights that they don't have themselves to a representative or to a government. And so if I don't have the ability to make up rules for Matt and Eric, then I can't delegate that right or take Matt and Eric's money and give it to charity or whatever it is the government claims it's doing for the public good, the quote unquote public good. Well, if I don't have the ability to do that myself, then I can't delegate it to a representative or to a government. I can't be bound by a social, quote unquote, social contract I didn't sign. And if it's wrong for myself and Matt to vote to take all of Eric's money, just because we outnumber him, I mean, that would be illegitimate. And so it doesn't matter if there's three of us voting or 20 of us voting or 250 million, there's nothing that's going to take something that's inherently immoral and illegitimate and make it moral just because the mob wants to lynch black folks or to, you know, rob Peter to pay Paul. And so what it's been is a scam. It's been the biggest scam in history. And so, you know, the idea that a couple of dozen slave owners on a continent of 3 million people could go into a room and write down on a piece of paper that they alone get to make up rules for the entire continent and steal the wealth of others is a farce, and it doesn't make any logical sense. It's not moral. It's not, you know, I mean, if a couple dozen of us got together today and then we had an election that less than 1% of people were able to trick 1% of the population into participating in our rigged, you know, election, because it's organized crime running game on people. And so we're going to trick people into thinking that because we had an election, that somehow gives us the right to now be immoral, and we now have rights that other people don't have. And so what my thesis and the thesis of the book is that it's been intergenerational organized crime running game on people and controlling the information that they receive primarily through the mandatory government school system. So the control of perception program begins with forcing everybody to go to a school where they're going to teach you why they get to rob you and how they get to rob you. And, oh, it's okay, you get to vote in an election every, you know, 4 years. And oh, you lost this year. Well, you'll have to vote harder next year and you'll get your way next year, whatever. And everybody, you know, because they slip that to you when you're young, before you're really old enough to understand the morality or the logic of what is being force-fed you in the mandatory government school, most people have just kind of accepted that, oh, well, that's how we decide things and that's how we organize society. And so what I break down in the book is the control of perception starts with the mandatory government school system, but they've been controlling perception since the founding of the country by controlling the media as well, to control the information that people get in a variety of ways. We break down control of the dictionary in the book. We break down how they control, you know, a great many, you know, of the institutions that create the culture. But the main one is the media. And so what they've done is, and the book is chock full of visualizations and media ownership charts that kind of show what has been hidden from the population, that there's a small handful of company. On the old media side, there's about 6 companies running hundreds and hundreds of subsidiaries to give everybody the illusion that there's all these different information sources, there's all these different news channels available to you. But until you actually see or show one of your relatives a media ownership chart where they can actually kind of see for themselves that it's just this small handful of companies, you know, one of the companies is News Corp, and they own Fox News, but they don't just own Fox News. They own 175 newspapers, and they own radio stations, and they own local television stations, and they own satellite networks, and they own book publishing companies, and they own television production, and they own television distribution, and they own movie production. And so they've been doing things like product placing the flag into the movies that you see, using a technique called anchoring, where they'll build up the audience to a moment of high positive emotion. And the example that, you know, I used on James Corbett's The Corbett Report, where we broke down the book in kind of really, really detail in an episode with James Corbett called How to Present Information to Visual Learners, that you can get on the Corbett Report website. You know, we showed a clip of the ending of The Martian, where they build the entire movie builds up to this one moment of high positive emotion where he gets off of Mars, and then boom, we're going to show you the flag. And
kind of didn't Mel Gibson do that in The Patriot? You know, when everyone was kind of retreating, he grabs a flag and runs forward. He's like,
So once you understand the trick and understand what the propaganda technique of anchoring is, now you're going to start seeing it all the time. Or take a look. Every single television show, every single movie, not every single one, but almost every single one, who's the hero? It's a government employee. Whether the government employee is the CIA agent, Tom Cruise saving the world from arch terrorists, or whether it's an FBI agent, a Mulder or Scully, or whether it's the sheriff's deputy saving everybody on The Walking Dead. They've got movies where they make heroes out of air marshals and fishing wildlife officers. And like, it's always this government employee that's always saving the day. And on every single channel and on every single movie, it's the government's legitimate. The government's legitimate. The government turned the dial, that shows you how old I am, like the dial, But like, go around the dial and every single channel, it's the government is legitimate. And you're never ever going to see this voluntarist case, presented where no, it's not, because they're using the monopolization of the media with the six companies, and then on the new media side. So there's about 2 to 3 dozen new media, either internet, search engines, social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Disqus that controls all the comments on websites, Reddit, Snopes, Amazon, Netflix, etc. They're algorithmically censoring or complete outright censoring. Like Amazon's been caught, and we break it down in the book, like all the crimes of Amazon, but they've been caught, deleting books off the platform that they don't want you to see, deleting documentaries off Prime Video that they don't want you to see. They're controlling the information that the population receives in a completely unethically manipulative way. That is hiding the voices that are trying to expose how the immorality and theft of the system. At the same time, they're amplifying the voices that are telling you that there's a pandemic going on and that you need to get this experimental vaccine that their pharmaceutical bed partners have complete immunity from. And so we're amplifying the voices that are going to hurt you while we're, algorithmically censoring the ones, the truth tellers.
You put so much work into this book, and you get the book, and it's pretty thin, right? A beautiful coffee table book. The beauty of the book that I love is this liberated flash drive that comes with it.
Yeah.
Everything in the book. So you're reading the book. Well, I'm reading the book and I'm looking through and I see like blue sentences with lines that look like clickable links. And you can just go on the flash drive, click on that link, and boom, there's your backup to what you put in the book. You've backed it up beautifully.
And you make it a book with a lot of pictures and stuff. It's not just like a words, people can actually just like take it and look at it casually. And then they start reading and they're like, holy shit, everything I know is a lie.
I'm a visual learner.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
I can't sit down with a 400 page book and read it. I fall asleep. I lose my attention. Yeah. I couldn't put this down. It was great. It was a lot of information that I already knew, but it just confirmed, what I already knew.
So you nailed it. The book is designed for visual learners. In my day job, I used to help Fortune 500 companies learn at the speed of light. And so I understand this, how people learn, and most people are visual learners and they come to insight much quicker and they come to a deeper level of understanding when they see something. And so I gave one of the examples I gave is, you can try and tell your friends and your relatives that there are six companies running hundreds of subsidiaries to give everybody the illusion that there's all these different information sources out there. And they may or may not believe you. But as you've already discovered, if you go to the media ownership chart and you show them the media ownership chart, they're like, holy shit, there's six companies running hundreds of subsidiaries to give everybody the illusion that there's all these different sources inside. And because they saw it with their own eyes, boom, they're going to come to a deeper level of understanding. They're going to retain the information longer. And so the whole book is designed to, how do you get somebody from 0 to 60 to that moment of insight where they get it, that government is illegitimate and that the media has been controlling the perception. The book is in its fourth edition, its 20th printing. It's been professionally edited, professionally fact-checked. I've been, you know, I've got, there's 100,000 plus, you know, views of videos of interviews or speeches I've given on the book. There's 95% plus positive comments. And in 2 years, nobody has ever come up to me and said, this is factually incorrect, or this is impossible. Like I've not had, you know, any of that in over 2 years of speaking around on the book around the world.
Well, to say you did your homework is an understatement. I mean, this is like years and years of research that you've done to come up with this. It's unbelievable.
And one thing that I really love about the book too is you talk about the six media companies that own, you know, all the newspapers, the websites, the what you see on TV. You also put in there, and we don't see this enough in this, you know, community that we're in, true community, whatever you want to call it, alternative media. You never see the infographic of the fact that it's 10 companies that control all the food that's sitting on our supermarket shelves too. And you put that in here. And the weird thing about that infographic is the first time I saw that infographic, it had the Oxfam label strapped all over it. So I decided to look up who Oxfam is, and their company that ended up getting into some pretty hot water with running prostitution rings in Haiti after the earthquake and running child trafficking scams. So it's even like these companies that are controlling everything, or these people that are controlling everything, are still putting out little tidbits of information like, we're doing this and we're doing it in your face. Ha ha ha. Fuck you. You know, it's absolutely crazy. So yeah, you're exposing all that in the book. And the other beauty part of the book too is, I don't know how you paid for it, but I bought it with Monero.
No, I bought it with cash. Huh.
Either way, the Monero did good today too. So
yeah. So the book was first of all, we'll talk about Oxfam, and we'll talk about the 10 companies that are controlling everybody's food, and those are the companies that are putting aspartame as a sweetener. They're the ones putting recombinant bovine growth hormone in the dairy. They're the ones using glyphosated wheat, glutamates, BPA, BPS in the cans. And so there's a debilitation program, but at the top of the food chain, and I break it down in the book, it is the government allowing the banks to create money out of thin air, even though it's inflationary. And so in 1913, they passed the Federal Reserve Act, which backstopped the banks to be able to do something that would be impossible and and illegal if it wasn't for the government making it legal. And that is for the banks to engage in something called fractional reserve banking. And for those in your audience that don't understand the scam, the big scam is when you go to a bank to get a mortgage or to a car loan, they're not lending you depositor money. They just go, bing. They tickle the ivories and boom, they credit your account with hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. And you spend your rest of your life paying off paying hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars on interest on a loan that they got to create out of thin air. Now, in addition to that being an exorbitant privilege that you and I don't get. I don't get to make my, like, they're just companies. We're going to let some companies create money out of thin air and not other companies. And so that capability of creating the money out of thin air, that's what gave them the unlimited capital to consolidate the media into six companies. That's what gave them the unlimited capital to provide certain companies with unlimited capital to monopolize their competition over time. Okay. So that now we've only got chain stores, chain restaurants, chain bullshit. It is not because these companies are better run than their competitors. It's because they're cheating and they're being given unlimited capital that the banks create out of thin air. So that process is inflationary. And that is the reason, as the banks create more and more and more dollars, that means all of these excess dollars, like the $7 trillion that they're creating through the stimulus and the bailouts for COVID. And by the way, we did an extensive investigation into COVID, and we believe that the COVID is the engineered and manufactured reason to hand the banks and private companies trillions of dollars in quote unquote bailout and stimulus. Okay, so it's a bank robbery. We're going to spend hundreds of billions with our monopoly media system and our government lackeys and everything like that to make it look like there's a pandemic, so that we're stealing trillions of dollars or being handed out in bailouts and stimulus, among other crimes, disaster capitalism, economic warfare against the people that want, they're trying to wipe out independent wealth. As the internet, like what we're doing right now, begins to get the message out to more and more and more people that government is illegitimate, that it's openly criminal, that they're that we're being robbed on a kind of colossal global scale, and so that is why, that is how they've been able to do it, is because they've got, it's imagine you're playing Monopoly and the banker is cheating and he's reaching under the table and he's stealing $500 bills. At the end of the game, who owns every single thing on the board and who are renters and debtors? And so we're being robbed and they get away with it because the media is in on it, and the media is not giving you the true story of why prices are rising, what's going on with the COVID, what's going on with the bailouts, you name it. It's a robbery.
Would you say it's 2008 part two right now? It almost seems like it is, only instead of using the housing market like they did in 2008, they're using the pharmaceutical companies now.
Well, I mean, part of the scam, and they're constantly using government to run a variety of different scams, but it's with the bailouts, you know, we're going to give the people chicken feed, $1,600. And we're going to hand private banks, private companies, trillions of dollars. But as long as everybody, you know, like the unfortunate thing about it is, as long as, you know, most people get their $1,600 stimmy check, they're like, hey, you know, so some other people got some bailouts and they don't realize the extent of how they're getting screwed. Now prices are going up. And now food prices are getting jacked. And now all of a sudden people are going, hey, wait a minute, what's going on with the food prices? And so now I think people are starting to, you know, to realize that this really is going to impact their bottom line and their pocketbook and the loss of economic opportunity, the loss of the jobs, the loss of independent businesses bankrupting their neighbors and their friends that had, you know, neighborhood bars or coffee shops or yoga studios or whatever it is. Now people are starting to see that government is not their friend and that something else is going on versus what the monopoly media is telling them.
So how do we go from here then? I'll ask the magic words.
That's what I was going to get to next. Yeah,
exactly. I think that's a perfect way to get into it.
Yeah.
So I have a startup public policy foundation called the Art of Liberty Foundation, and we're a think tank. And one of the things that we've been doing is trying to figure out, how do you win the whole thing? How do you expose organized crimes, control, when you have a monopolized media and you have algorithmic censorship on the internet? And so the book was not just designed for visual learners. The book was also designed to be able to be dropped off to somebody's home with a flash drive, with a documentary, in a way where, as you guys have already figured out, like once you pick it up, you're hooked, man. There's no way you're going to like not read and understand what's going on here. And so so the only way, we call it a brute force attack on censorship, is you got to go door to door. You've got to drop off 100,000 plus copies of the book, the flash drive with all of the evidence backing up the book, a documentary, and essentially a letter explaining, you know, what's going on. You've got to drive people to town hall meetings, and you've got to then answer all their questions, you know, and then move them to open source, distributed, encrypted communication, to where your communication with them can't be censored. And you just expose it widely in a way that is impossible for the population to ignore. And what our thesis is if we can win one state, and one state either secedes from the union, or you're able to achieve a level of kind of Gandhi, Martin Luther King-esque civil disobedience, to where 15, 20, 25, 30% of the population is like, We get it. It's a scam. We're not doing what you say. We're not paying your taxes. We're not withholding taxes for our employees. We're not listening to the government officials or to the monopoly government law enforcement anymore. We're not, you know, we're not going along with the scam anymore. That would be impossible to ignore. So if you want it, so what is the state that is easiest to free? Well, we think it's New Hampshire, for the exact same reasons that the Free State Project picked New Hampshire. It has a small 1.3 million population. It's a very small state, easy to canvass, easy to, you know, get around at. We could pretty much with 12 different cities, you know, have town hall meetings and have book and flash drive drops in you know, a dozen communities and hit the overwhelming majority of the concentration of the population. New Hampshire has very no income tax, no sales tax. It has a very low percentage of people that are on the government dole, either, you know, have government jobs or are on welfare or benefits. I can go on and on for all the reasons that make it attractive, but probably the biggest reason is there's already 5,000 members of the Free State Project that are on the ground in New Hampshire. And for those of your audience not familiar with the Free State Project, you know, I'm a voluntarist. I used to be a libertarian until I figured out just how illegitimate government was. But there are a group of libertarians that got together and said, hey, you know, there's a lot of libertarians in the United States. The problem is we're all spread out all over the place and we don't have any, you know, we're never able to achieve any kind of economic power. And so in 2002, they said, hey, why don't we all get together, concentrate in one state that's got a history of liberty that, you know, we'd want to move to anyway. It's got a little bitty tiny government or as small government as we can get in the United States. And so they had a beauty contest where they began to figure out, you know, using, you know, kind of scientifically looking at what's the easiest state to take over. And it came down to Wyoming and New Hampshire, and New Hampshire won. And so it starting in 2002, people began, libertarians and voluntarists began moving to New Hampshire and getting themselves elected, starting businesses. They've opened, I think, 120 plus businesses in New Hampshire, or moved 120, you know, either started or moved over 120 businesses. They've bought hundreds of millions of dollars worth of real estate. They've contributed and you know, to the economy in New Hampshire. And they got, because they're activists and they're willing to walk the walk and not just talk the talk, they've got themselves organized into organizations that do everything from rate the bills that come out of the New Hampshire legislature to you know, put little mini libraries of liberty into laundromats, to find people in the Free State Project that want to move to New Hampshire jobs, to I can go on and on and on, but they've created a network of liberty individuals that are committed to reducing government. Some of them are still what were called minarchists, and they believe that it ought to be, you know, tiny and constitutional. Some of them are voluntarists that think you don't have to have a government at all, and that we would do way better without government, and the free market could provide, the free market or mutual aid or real charity could take care of everything that the government does that's non-redistributive. You can't rob Peter to pay Paul, but if it's roads or if it's air traffic control or if it's armed protective services or dispute resolution, which the government calls courts, all of that could be done in the free market. And there's in the book, and the flash drive is chock full of videos and examples and books that will explain exactly how that can be done. And so they began moving to New Hampshire. And they were the deal was, is when the total population of the group hit 20,000, that everybody would move. Well, once they picked New Hampshire, some people began moving immediately. Those people were called early movers, and they've been on the ground since 2003. And now there's over 5,000. They have 550 meetups in the state. And so that concentration of libertarians and voluntarists is the highest in the world. And so that's the army. And now what I'm suggesting and the project that we're trying to popularize and gain support for is something that we call the Pre-State Project. And so with the Free State Project, the 20,000, the deal was, is that once you hit 20,000, everybody has 5 years to move. And so they hit the 20,000 number in 2016. So this is the last year that people are expected to move. Not everybody's going to move. Some people are dead. Some people, you know, that when it ended up being New Hampshire, they said, I'm not going to go to New Hampshire. Some people got, you know, married. Some people got divorced. Some people got like, well, you know, there's a whole bunch of reasons why not everybody's going to move. But that dynamic is still going on. And every single week, more and more people arrive in New Hampshire.
Hold on 1 second. Sorry, hold on, my dogs. Hold on.
Sorry.
Are you guys gonna edit, or are we gonna?
Yeah, we'll edit this out. Yeah, okay. I don't do much editing, but this, yeah, this for sure.
You got it.
Are you in New Hampshire?
Yeah, so I'm a member of the Free State Project, and I began the move 2 years ago, and then I was in the state maybe 3-4 months. And then was going to dodge the winter. And then when I in the process of dodging the winter, when I got back, COVID hit, and then I got trapped in Guatemala. And so then from Guatemala, I ended up in California, and I just haven't had a chance to get back yet. And then the winter hit again. And so I dodged the winter again in Arizona. But my goal is to spend half my time in New Hampshire and half my time in Arizona. So I'll be back up there for Porkfest.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. We want to try and make it up to Porkfest. It's just for him, it'd be a lot easier than for me. Cause I got, you know, two kids and we got things going on and
take them, man. It's so family friendly. Your kids will love it.
You know, the problem is selling my wife on it and selling her on camping for an entire week. What I want to do is start getting into some of the stuff that's local in Manchester. You know, we're in Salem. It's just a quick, you know, 20-minute ride up to Manchester.
Yeah.
You know, some of the stuff that I'm seeing on the, you know, the Free State Project's website, the meetups and all that. But anyway, we got the dogs under control. All right,
sorry about that.
Right. Yeah. So why don't we come back in and I'll start my point about how the Free State Project works again.
Yeah, please. All right. Awesome.
All right.
Go ahead.
So the deal with the Free State Project is that once the total membership of the group hit 20,000, then everybody had 5 years to move. The early movers started moving in 2003, but they hit the 20,000 mark in 2016. So this is the last year that everybody has to move that is committed. Now, not everybody is going to move. Some people have already died. Some people, when it ended up being New Hampshire, said, I'm out. Some people got divorced. Some people got married. You know, there's a lot of reasons why, you know, some people can't afford it. Some people are trying, you know, like there's a lot of reasons why not everybody is going to move. But I think I mentioned in my day job, I'm a kind of productivity expert for Fortune 500 companies. And so I put on my little Fortune, you know, my productivity expert hat. And I said, hey, it's a lot easier to wake up people within the state to the scam of government, the scam of the illegitimacy of it, the criminality of it, and to find the libertarian leaning and convert them to the goals of the Free State Project. So in New Hampshire, a pre-stater is someone that already lives in New Hampshire, but shares the goals of the Free State Project. And so what I want to do and what I'm trying to get funded right now is creating 20,000 pre-staters that would then meet up with 20,000 Free Staters and have a friendly little race to see which of us gets to 20,000 the first. And I think that you can do that. I think you can get to way past $20,000 for somewhere between $2 and $3 million, which is not a lot of money considering that if we win in New Hampshire, we win everywhere. So if you want a free New York, free New Hampshire, if you want a free California, free New Hampshire, you want a free the United Kingdom, free New Hampshire, but everybody that loves liberty, we have to win someplace first, but we can win everywhere, but we have to win someplace first. And that someplace is New Hampshire. And so the way to do it is this brute force attack on the monopolization of the media and the algorithmic censorship. And so what we're proposing is this drop of 100,000 hard copies of the book, the flash drive, a documentary, pushing people to 36 town hall meetings in one dozen communities in New Hampshire, where people that have never been exposed to this or have been or know exactly what's going on, but just didn't know that there was an avenue to where we could free the single state and roll it all back. Let's get them energized, introduce them to all of these liberty groups that exist in the state. And so we're trying to expose the biggest scam in history widely by getting around the censorship, by going door to door, brute force attack, sneaker net solution to algorithmic censorship. And then what we want to do is we want to turn New Hampshire into a laboratory of liberty. We want to show the world how to roll it back, starting with a peaceful and orderly secession from the quote unquote United States. So
would they let us do that? Would they actually let us do that? Or would it be like a huge backlash on us if we do secede?
So we're exposing that the whole thing is a scam. So this right. is different than what happened in the Civil War or what happened anywhere.
Okay.
We're showing, hey, they've been lying to you about the legitimacy, the necessity, the desirability of having a government. They've been running game on you. They've been, you know, controlling all the information you see. They've been forcing you to go to a mandatory school. They've been putting, you know, all these movies on television where they're, you know, using unethically manipulative techniques like anchoring. There's a hidden curriculum in the scouting organization. There's a hidden curriculum in the military. There's a hidden curriculum here. It's unethically manipulative. And so that's a lot different than, you know, we're, you know, we're breaking up the quote unquote union because the union is legitimate and that we, you know, and so that's a different dynamic. Nobody likes to get chumped. And once people find out that they've been getting chumped, I mean, I fell for it. I was a scout. I was a Cub Scout. I was a Boy Scout. But once somebody pointed it out to me, how I got chumped, I'm like, oh, okay, I got chumped. Well, then I'm mad and I'm going to go tell everybody else how the game works, and we're going to expose it to everybody else. And so I think that once it falls in New Hampshire, boom, we're going after Idaho, we're going after Wyoming, we're going after Arizona. We're going to, I think you're going to see all the other states secede from Washington, D.C. immediately and just begin rolling it back over time. And because nobody likes to get chumped.
Now, aside from kind of piggybacking, I guess, off of the libertarian events in the state, like the, you know, Pork Fest happening, and then these little isolated souls of things happening, maybe in Keene and Manchester. How do you plan to organize individuals to get these, you know, flash drives copied? Is this going to be all total like internet, or is there going to be some sort of convention in the state here that you're planning or anything like that?
We would begin organizing individual communities and finding those people that have leadership capability within each of the communities, mm-hmm. and then, you know, giving them the resources to organize their own communities and self-organize,
right.
Using the book, using the flash drive, creating a documentary. And the goal also is to create a media operation that is able to broadcast on every single, you know, channel. And when I say channel, I mean every single social media network. You know, it's a brute force attack on the ability to censor on certain platforms, not other platforms. And then once you get a platform that's not censoring, then they get bought. So you just got to go full out. But everything from, you know, being able to begin communicating outside of that system from, hard copy, you know, newspapers in the state to, you know, micro FM to, you know, like we're going to figure out how to get around the censorship in a single state. And I think once we start the process, then we'll have people that will help us from all over the world when they realize the stakes of winning a single state, what that would mean to liberty.
What kind of, obstacles or pushbacks do you see from this? our governor, I don't know how much you know about him, but we both think that the guy's a total scumbag. Mm-hmm. And would be completely, you know, doing anything in his power to suppress this. He won't even let people protest in front of his house for bullshit that he pulls in office and abuses of power there. What kind of resistance do you see to this whole thing? And how do you plan on overcoming it?
Well, I mean, the hardest thing has been raising the money for it, because a lot of people don't want to go up against murder, incorporated, organized crime. I mean, you know, this is the real deal. This is, we kill people, you know, we got a whole, you know, a rich tradition of political assassination in the United States. And so some of the people that can afford to do it, you know, aren't interested in going up against organized crime. So it really is finding the people that have the courage and the resources to be able to engage in something like this has probably been the biggest obstacle. We've got donors and we've got people that support us and everything like that, but you know, we're trying to raise $2 to $3 million. And so that's not a lot of money in the grand scheme of things, but it is, you know, if it makes them a high profile target for, you know, a murder incorporated organized crime system that has absolutely no problem murdering, you know, millions and millions of brown people around the world. So, I mean, that's probably the biggest obstacle. If we had the money, then it's game on. There's no way to really, you know, stop it other than, you know, arresting everybody involved with the project, which I don't think is feasible. That would just, you know, that would just draw attention to it. And so, you know, once we're able to do the drop and drive people to the meetings, I don't think there's anything they can do. And once people realize that the governor is illegitimate and he doesn't really legitimately have the ability to tell you what to do, and he's been robbing you for half your tax money and like stealing your, like participate, living off money stolen from others at the point of a gun, it's going to be all over for the governor of New Hampshire, unless he gets on board and says, hey, you know, we need to roll this back. These guys are right. But if he's not, then he's going to be exposed as a criminal.
He wouldn't. Daddy's on the CFR and his father. And, you know, they have this Anglo-Asian mining company and they're ripping up other countries with, you know, their lust for gold and blood gold. And it's a pretty ugly situation.
Can I ask this question? Okay. On a voluntarist mentality, how do I explain to somebody how the roads would get paved? I don't know how to explain it, and that's always, you know, a status thing. Who's going to pay for the roads?
Sure. So first of all, the United States had roads before there had government. They had turnpikes. They had turnpikes. They had you know, roads that were built by, you know, the farmers themselves. So there were roads before there was government, number one. Number two, the people that would pay for the roads are the people that use the roads. So if a builder wanted to build a housing development in Manchester, then he would have to build the roads, and the HOA would take over the management of the roads. And the HOA, because they're, you know, like right there where the spending is, they're going to make sure they're going to get a better, I guarantee you, they're going to get a better deal on a longer lasting road than the government is when they're trying to buy it from Washington, D.C. or Concord. If you're talking about businesses, if you want to build a Walmart, and I hate using the term Walmart, but if a company wants to build a business, then they have to build a road to the business as part of. And so that's the way you would see cities grow. They would grow organically, as when people say, hey, there's money to be made over there and either putting up a business or a housing development or whatever, then boom, they're going to build the roads to that. Okay. Now, the interstate highway system would have been toll roads and would have been paid for by the people selling the gas and the drinks and the food and the restaurants and everything along the side of it. And then that's much more equitable because you're only paying for the road that you're using. You're not paying. So it's going to be way cheap. Even though that goes, well, wait a minute, you mean there's going to be toll roads everywhere? You're going to pay way less than you would by them hiding the cost of the roads in 43 cents a gallon for every gallon you pay. and people in New Hampshire shouldn't be paying for roads in Alaska, and people that are using that needs roads in Alaska, you know, shouldn't be expecting, you know, they should be paying for that. And so it's more equitable. It's going to be cheaper. You're going to get a higher quality road because HOA is going to make sure that they get every nickel worth, and they're going to, you know, versus I got to tell you, as far as I can tell, it seems in some states and some localities I've been in that they're just throwing up crappy ass roads so they can sell the county a new road in 5-10 years instead of 20 or 30. And so I think everybody would be way, way better off no matter what the good and services. And we can, you know, go over, you know, a couple of them, but like air traffic control. Canada has already privatized air traffic control. And guess what? Planes aren't dropping out of the sky. And so whatever it is, I assure you that the free market with its invisible hand and its capital creation mechanisms is going to be able to satisfy exactly what government, the legitimate functions of government that are non-redistributive. Now, the redistributive part has got to go away because it's immoral and it has unintended consequences.
Would that be taxes?
Well, that'd be, you know, like welfare, transfer payments, agricultural subsidies, you know, paying rich farmers in Mississippi, the Mississippi Christmas tree, look up Mississippi Christmas tree. Like all of those transfer payments, those have all got to go away because you can't be robbing Peter to pay Paul. And so, but the main thing is that I want people to understand is if we had a legitimate money system, if the government was not stealing the value out of everybody's dollars by allowing these banks to print trillions and trillions of dollars and creating trillions of dollars to hand to private banks and private company through the bailouts and the stimulus, if we had an honest money system, a hard money system, then everybody's money would buy more and more each year. Imagine however long you've lived, if the dollar bought more and more each year, how wealthy you would be if they just weren't stealing the value out of everybody's dollar. Right. So once we get rid of the crooked monetary system, you're going to see the economy boom. You're going to see people be very, very wealthy compared to what they are today as innovations and productivity improvements reduce the costs of either producing or distributing the luxuries and necessities of life. So you know, when I was on Monica Perez, I don't know if you heard the article that you can get at www.government-scam.com/Monica. But when we had that, she pointed out, you know, a pair of jeans. And she, you know, years ago, a pair of jeans cost 50 cents. And now they cost $50. Well, do you think it's more or less, quote unquote, expensive to make a pair of jeans using mass production and just in time inventory and global distribution and every, you know, all of the innovations and productivity improvements that we've had to be able to produce and distribute jeans? Well, it should obviously be cheaper. So what happened? Did the cost of jeans go up? Or did somebody steal all the value out of our money? And now it takes more rapidly depreciating fiat paper ticket dollars to buy the same pair of jeans.
Do you see cryptocurrencies solving that problem?
Absolutely. And so I think they're trying to control crypto.
Yeah.
So, but once, you know, and I covered in the book, there was a, you know, NSA white paper that came out in 1996, a decade before Satoshi's white paper, that outlined, you know, the cryptocurrency, the wallet system, everything like that. And I think there were already people that were knocking on the door of crypto with e-gold and everything. And so I think they tried to get in front of crypto with Bitcoin, and that's the compliance currency, and that's what the Lightning Network is, and that's how we're going to wire it into the payment processors and into the banks, and they're trying to control it. But once the cat was out of the bag, and now, oh, wait, we can have competitive cryptos. Now the free market and innovation came in, and now you've got cryptos that have anonymity features. And I cover all of this in the book. But crypto is definitely, definitely going to give the fiat paper dollar system a run for its money. And it already is. And I got time for one more question.
Okay, awesome. And well, actually, what I want to do is have you talk real quickly about the other project that you're working on. Because we touched base on Art of Liberty Foundation. We talked about the book. Tell me about The Thick Red Line, and we'll close it out with Thick Red Line and what that project is that you're working on.
Well, The Thick Red Line is a project that we support, and that project is being run by other people. But the Thick Red Line project is supporting the police to say no to the politicians on victimless crimes. And so right now, the police get in a lot of hot water because they're out there enforcing what are called victimless crimes for politicians. A victimless crime is one that doesn't have a victim. So gambling, smoking the wrong kind of plant, you name it, prostitution, accidentless speeding tickets, things like that. That's where the government just says, hey, we wrote down on a piece of paper that we get to use violence on peaceful people to either try and engineer society the way that we think it ought to be, or to raise revenue on the population through what Sheriff Mack calls taxation through citation. And so, so a lot of these laws are completely immoral, and the police don't want to be doing them. They don't want to be participating in the lockdowns. They don't want to be participating in the mask mandates, but they get fired if they stand up one at a time. And so what the Thick Red Line program is saying, project is saying, is that they're organizing the police and organizing community support behind the police to say no to any crime that doesn't have a victim. And so where do you draw the thick red line in the sand? They're saying, hey, police officers, sheriff's deputies, draw a thick red line in the sand and say, tell the politicians that you're not going to use violence on peaceful people unless there's a real victim. And if they did that, that makes the lockdowns go away. It makes the mask mandates go away. It ends the travesty of throwing peaceful people into jail for smoking a plant. It saves the taxpayers billions of dollars. You get all these different benefits, but most importantly, it restores respect for the police, because nobody has a problem with the police when they're busting murderers, rapists, and robbers. All of the racial and societal division comes from the enforcement of victimless crimes. That's what turns every, traffic stop into a commando stop with body armor, and we get to search your car looking for, drugs. That's empowering the drug cartels. It's making the drug cartels money. You could break the back of the drug cartels by legalizing drugs, and they're de facto legal right now. And so do away with victimless crimes, and you do away with the racial and societal division, and you stop the lockdowns, you end the mask mandates. It's the thing that makes it go away and restores respect for the police. And that's thickredline.org.
Now, why thick red line and not thick blue line?
Well, the police say that they have a thin blue line. I'm sure you've heard of the police officer's thin blue line. Well, what we're saying, it's much more important to draw a thick red line in the sand and say, we're not going to act immorally. We're not going to use violence on peaceful people. And if they do that, then they will have the support of the community. And so we're uniting the community with the police against the politicians. And then once the police do realize that they have the ability, a lot of police officers, they don't understand they have the ability to say no. They don't have to go along with this. They get fired if they say no one at a time. But if they stood up a dozen, two dozen, hundreds at a time and said, we're not going to do it, there's nothing the politicians can do to make them. And if your sheriff isn't willing to be a thick red line department, then you need to fire him and get a sheriff that isn't going to rob you for politicians or try and engineer society for politicians. That's the denominator of a good sheriff. That's the denominator of the kind of community you want to live in, is you want to live under a sheriff that isn't going to rob you, and where you don't have to worry about your teenager being arrested for smoking a plant or in being thrown into jail or something like that. These are travesties. It's all got to stop.
Mm-hmm. Etienne, this has been awesome. I want to get in touch with you offline to talk more about the Art of Liberty and the Pre-State Project. And you know what the Resistance Chronicle can do to kind of support this, maybe here in Salem. And you know, we've been looking to get involved locally in our political scene a little bit. So yeah, we'll be reaching out to you. With that being said, can you let everybody know where they can find you?
government-scam.com. And then if you're interested in the Art of Liberty program and our program to free New Hampshire, it's government-scam/foundation or /Art of Liberty. And you can see we've got a complete executive summary on the capital raise and what the full plan is. I gave you the overview, but you can see the detail at government-scam.com/foundation for the Art of Liberty Foundation. Thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you. We'll put all that in the show notes. We've got you linked up on our website, resistancechronicle.com, with some of your videos and your book and everything. And we'll get that up on there too, man. Thank you for joining us tonight. Really appreciate it.
Thank you guys.
Good night and good luck.
We're all going to win it together.
Absolutely, yep. Man. We'll talk soon.
Take care.
You got it. Bye, guys.